I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon, the 7th of May. Due to coastal development, pollution, global aquarium trade, coral bleaching, rising sea levels, ocean acidification, and coral disease, coral reefs in the world are in trouble. Some reefs are in much greater trouble than others. Scientists are predicting by the year 2030, 90% of coral reefs around the world will be threatened if action isn't taken to protect them. So why do humans need them, and why should we protect them, and what are they, and how have they changed? All questions of the hour, and our guest is Dr. Madhavi Colton. She's program director of the Reefs Tomorrow Initiative, investigates coral reef resilience, and works with managers to apply the knowledge to conservation. Her work is focused on uniting communities to reduce threats that are facing coral reefs, such as overfishing and poor quality of the water. She has also designed programs monitoring California's network of marine protected areas. She's trained as an ecologist, received her PhD in marine biology from the University of Melbourne, where she researched understanding patterns in the abundance and distribution of nearshore fish at multiple spatial scales. She's done much research on fish populations along the California coast, and today we talk about those coral reefs. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave your messages there. And we thank you very much, Dr. Colton, for being with us this hour. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kathleen. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, our great pleasure. I've had the great pleasure to do a lot of snorkeling in my lifetime, particularly in younger years, and I snorkeled recently and noticed just this dramatic change in the colors of the coral reefs and how abundant the fish were around coral reefs. If you do any snorkeling or scuba diving, I'm sure it's very obvious that something serious is going on.
Absolutely. And you speak to an interesting phenomenon called the shifting baseline phenomenon, which is that the first time that people see a coral reef or some sort of an ecosystem, they take a mental snapshot of what that ecosystem looks like, and they assume that's what it looks like when it's really healthy. And then, like you said, if you go back a number of years later, you'll realize that things might have changed, might have really declined since that first visit to that system. What we're also seeing is that, you know, the first time that I got in the water, maybe 30 years ago now, things were already pretty bad at that point. And so even over the course of a lifetime, we see these declines, but they're declining beyond to a more of a degree than we may realize.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the importance of coral reefs. Why do they exist?
Well, coral reefs are incredibly important to a number of people. Some 500 million people rely on reefs. They provide food for local communities, approximately a billion people, 85% of whom rely on reefs for their primary source of protein. They also generate tourism dollars that are really important to local communities around the world. They've provided a number of pharmaceuticals, so compounds that we use in things like sunscreen and painkillers, maybe even cancer and HIV treatments have been derived from coral reefs. In addition, they protect shorelines from storms. And then there's just the intrinsic value of the reefs themselves. These are amazing and beautiful ecosystems. And so all of these things add up to making corals extremely valuable for us. One recent estimate said that they are worth over $1 trillion.
Oh, my goodness. I wonder if people even know that these are live creatures. When you look at a coral reef, you may say, oh, this is really pretty plant life. But they're living organisms, and it takes a long time for them to grow, doesn't it?
It does. And you speak to a very interesting thing, which is a lot of people, when they see a coral reef, they think either it's just a rock or they think it's a plant. But corals are actually animals. And they're one of, in my opinion, one of the most amazing animals in the world. They're related to jellyfish. And they have a symbiotic or mutually beneficial relationship with tiny little algae that live in their cells. And by working with these algae, basically what corals do is they use sunlight to build rock. And so the reef structure that you see is the skeleton that the corals have built over a very, very long period of time. But what we don't realize is that those skeletons are inhabited by these many, many small individual animals.
Mm-hmm. And over the years that I've looked at these coral reefs, I've noticed that they've become very bleached out. So many of them just look like they're white. Years ago, they were vibrant colors. What makes the color in a coral reef?
A lot of the color in the coral reef actually comes from those little algae that live within the corals. They're like imagine if we had farms under our skin, basically. And so when the corals experience a lot of really warm water conditions, one of the things that happens when they get stressed out is that those algae leave, and you end up with what's called coral bleaching, which is a real problem because corals, once they've bleached, sometimes they die, and generally they're not able to grow nearly as rapidly. So they become very threatened through these bleaching activities.
And are we seeing significant amounts of warming in the world's oceans, and is it affecting certain parts of the world more than others?
We sure are seeing significant amounts of warming in the world's oceans. In fact, 2014 was not just the warmest year on record for land, but also for our oceans. There are different parts of the ocean that warm in different ways, but certainly around the tropics, in particular if we get an El Nino event, things can heat up really rapidly there, and that will have a bad effect on the corals.
I know there have been scientists studying coral reefs in parts of the world that are still quite remote, a number of little islands in the Pacific Ocean. Some describe them as virtually untouched by human influence. Are those coral reefs still thriving?
Yes, indeed. There are some places that are very far away from humans that are as close to pristine as we have at this point in the world. And the coral reefs in those areas are thriving. They do experience bleaching events, but they tend to recover more quickly. What we think of is, we like to think of these reefs as more resilient. They're able to withstand bad environmental conditions, and they recover more quickly when they experience them. And one of those places is Palmyra Atoll, which is in the central Pacific Ocean, about halfway between Hawaii and Samoa. And it's a magical place, and I work with some researchers who are studying the corals out there.
Oh, so tell me what's different about those than what you might find, say, in the Caribbean.
The way that I think I like to think about coral reef ecology is that it's kind of a battle, if you will. There's a finite amount of real estate that these coral reefs can inhabit, where they get enough sunlight to grow, where the waters are the right clarity for them to thrive, where the waters are warm enough for them to grow. And in that battlefield, you have corals fighting with algae, fighting with different sponges. And so we're actually studying what those battles look like out at Palmyra Atoll in this remote area right now, to understand how those interactions play out differently to, say, a reef in the Caribbean. In the Caribbean, a lot of reefs, the corals have lost the battles to algae, and they're not looking so healthy right now.
Mm-hmm. And what does fishing have to do with a decline in coral reefs, or overfishing?
Yes, overfishing can have a really bad effect on coral reefs. So if you take the battle analogy I just used, fish can be soldiers on the side of the corals. There are a number of fish that eat algae. They're called herbivorous fish. An example would be a parrotfish. And what they do is they keep algae in check, stop it from growing. And when I say algae, I mean things like seaweeds. And by helping to keep that algae in check, they create more room for the corals to grow and thrive. So overfishing, particularly of fishes like the herbivores, can be really bad for reefs.
Mm-hmm. And what about coastal development?
Coastal development also not good for reefs. So coastal development can impact reefs in a number of different ways. A lot of those impacts have to do with the water quality that in those nearshore coastal environments. So coastal development can lead to releasing a lot of sediment into the water. Once that sediment's in the water is really cloudy. And if you'll recall, one of the ways that corals grow is by using these algae to photosynthesize, to grab the energy from the sun. And so if the water's really cloudy, they can't get that energy from the sun that they need in order to grow. The other threat from coastal development is that with coastal development comes wastewater issues, and wastewater is really bad for corals. There are a lot of nutrients in wastewater, like nitrogen and phosphorus, and these are basically like giving arms to the algae. These components really allow the algae to grow and thrive. So in that battle, what that coastal development is doing is helping the algae and harming the corals.
Mm-hmm. And this was something I had never even thought about, Dr. Colton, and I wonder how huge a problem this is. I have read that one of the threats to coral reefs is global aquarium trade. Is that right?
Yes. The global aquarium trade can remove a lot of fishes from reefs. I believe that there are ways, if you are a home aquarist, there are ways to get fish and corals for your tanks where those have been raised by humans. So instead of taking fresh things off the reef, these are reared in tanks, and so that can be much more beneficial to the reefs rather than going out and taking these animals directly from the environment.
Mm-hmm. And how about invasive species?
Invasive species, also a problem. I feel like this is all doom and gloom, but
I know.
I'm sure
we'll get to the better
the
in a moment.
Soon.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, there are invasive species. I think one of the species that's received a lot of press lately are lionfish. These are fish, they're beautiful fish, and they're native to the Pacific, and they've been showing up in the Caribbean. I think the theory is that someone released some from their tank, and these fish are voracious predators, and they like to eat lots of other fish, and they don't have any natural predators themselves. And so they're causing quite a lot of problems on reefs in the Caribbean.
So as somebody who's involved in trying to figure out how to conserve these coral reefs, the problems, because we just spent a lot of minutes on what the problems are and they're so substantial, what are you doing to try to bring them back to life, if that's possible, or to conserve what we have? What do we do? What do you do?
That's a great question. So there are two different kinds of threats, or this is how I think about it. There are two different kinds of threats that face coral reefs. There are the global threats, which we've spoken about. Those are climate change and ocean acidification. And then there are local threats like overfishing and poor water quality. And so what I'm involved in, what we do at the Coral Reef Alliance, is really try and tackle those local threats, because we believe that by creating a network of healthy reefs, those healthy reefs will be much better positioned, much more able to deal with the changes that are coming in terms of warming waters and ocean acidification. So I can go into a little bit more detail on some of our specific things if you'd like me to.
Please, yes.
So one of the things that we're involved in, we were just speaking about herbivores and how they are basically like soldiers for the corals, if you think about this coral reef as a battle for space. One of the projects that we've been involved in is establishing a marine reserve on the island of Maui in Hawaii that specifically protects herbivores. So you can't take herbivores from the Kahikili Marine Reserve in Maui. And what that does is it allows the herbivore population to thrive, and that can help keep the algae in check and allow the corals to grow.
And can we bring back, when you see those corals that look like they're all bleached out, how do you bring them back to life? Can we bring them back to life?
So not all bleached corals are dead necessarily. There are some corals will die as a result of bleaching. A lot of corals are able to recover from bleaching. And so what we can do to help those corals recover from bleaching is make sure that their environment is healthy. And that means cleaning up water quality issues and addressing local threats like overfishing.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guests, and let me give you our number to join the conversation. Our conversation is centering on coral reefs throughout the world and this prediction that by the year 2030, 90% of coral reefs around the world will be threatened if action isn't taken on several fronts to protect them, which would be bad for us in all kinds of ways. It would be bad medicines that we get from the coral reefs, fishing that takes place around these coral reefs, and so much of the world has a fish-based diet. So we welcome your concern and your calls about what you have seen. And here's how you reach us. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Dr. Madhavi Colton is our guest, lead conservation scientist and Reefs Tomorrow Initiative Program Director with the Coral Reef Alliance. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls now for Dr. Colton. We start with Steve, who's calling us from Cumberland. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
We're very interested in restoring reefs. We have a beautiful piece of primitive land right on the coast of the Caribbean at the north end of Ambergris Key in Belize, where the reef comes very close to shore. Almost to the cut where Belize joins Mexico. And it's just a lovely area. It's in the Bacalar Chico Maritime Reserve. But and we snorkel up there. We don't develop the land. We were curious about restoring mangroves and restoring the reef. If there is any other than trying to slow down fishing and prevent bad runoff, can you actually rebuild the reef through those actions? Would the reef regenerate?
Dr. Holden?
Hello?
Yes. Hello, Steve. Thanks for the question. I've actually been to Ambergris Key, and it is indeed a beautiful part of the world. There are different organizations that are at work doing things like restoring reefs. There are approaches that they take that involve growing corals in labs and then planting them out on the reef to help the reef grow back. Mm-hmm. And while they show some promise in helping to rebuild reefs, the problems remain that if you've still got poor water quality in those areas or overfishing, the corals that you plant out on these reefs aren't going to fare any better than the corals that were there already. So I really do think that to restore these reefs, to keep them as healthy as we can, it does require tackling these local threats like water quality, pollution, and overfishing.
So there isn't a more adaptive solution that might be able to survive in the face of those challenges. It really is back to preventing the damage that's going on.
It's both preventing the damage that's going on, and I think that by doing that, what we're able to do is create a condition in which the corals can adapt or acclimatize to the changes that are coming. So by making sure that these areas are as healthy as possible, we're giving the corals a leg up, if you will, in facing these bigger changes that are looming.
Mm. How do the reefs look now, Steve?
They are turning white and dying, and it's just a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
The land is so beautiful, and the water is clear, and it's lovely, but you can tell that the reefs are being attacked, and it's just a very sad situation.
Yeah.
You know, just south from there, well, significantly south from there, is the island of Roatan in Honduras, which is also a beautiful spot to go if you have a chance. We've been working with a local organization there called Roatan Marine Park, which is involved in protecting and monitoring the marine park that's been established around the west end of Roatan. I had the good fortune to have to go to Honduras for work. Yes, my job is terrible. Got a chance to get in the water there last year, and me and some colleagues were out snorkeling on the fringing reef there, and we had some cameras with us, so we were spending a lot of time free diving, so a lot of time underwater rather than just snorkeling across the surface. And at some point, one of us heard a boat. And, of course, when you're snorkeling, you need to be really aware of boats because it's pretty hard to spot a snorkel in the water. So we all pop our heads up, and we turn around, and we look. And it's a patrol boat from the Roatan Marine Park.
Oh.
And they had come over to see what we were doing. Because
excellent.
I guess, yeah, they said when people spend a lot of time underwater like that, they assume that they're fishing using spear poles.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
But instead we were just taking pictures, and so the patrol boat shows up and we all wave and we're smiling, and the policeman on the boat is looking at us like, you crazy tourists, what are you doing?
Wait. We're on your side.
Right, we're here
yes,
to save
exactly.
the reefs.
Yeah. Exactly. So there are things like that. If you do end up going to Roatan and you go diving, you can buy a dive band. It's a bracelet. They release different colors every year. And the funds from that go to supporting things like these patrols that help protect our marine environment. So there are these local things that you can potentially do in your area if you're really worried about it that can help manage and protect and keep these reefs as healthy as possible so that they can weather what's coming their way.
Well, we'll give that a try. Certainly Roatan is one of the most beautiful snorkeling and diving spots in the world, and I'd like to save all of it.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve, for the call. Are you working, Dr. Colton, all over the world?
We are working in a number of places around the world. The Coral Reef Alliance does work in Honduras and the Mesoamerican Reef, which reaches from Honduras up to Mexico. We work in Fiji, in the Pacific, in Hawaii, and in Indonesia.
Mm. And when you talked about coral reefs being able to adapt to what's coming, can they adapt to significant global warming?
Yes, there is evidence that some reefs have already adapted to the warming that has occurred since the onset of the Industrial Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
There are also there's some research that's come out of various places around the world, notably in Samoa, of some corals that naturally live in much warmer water environments, and those corals are have a suite of genes that they can basically turn on, or that are already turned on, that allow them to deal with that heat stress. So there's evidence of local acclimatization to these kinds of conditions, as well as adaptation, more of the genetic changes over time to warming conditions, and potentially ocean acidification as well.
Thank you so much, Steve, for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Anne and Nina. Hi, Anne.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
See, are you familiar with the Nicaraguan intercoastal canal? They're talking about building that will connect the Caribbean with the Pacific Ocean?
Oh, not very. I just know that there was talk about it.
Well, apparently there's a rich Chinese man who wants to fund that, and from what I understand, the United States is going to help fund that, and it's going to be huge, 240-some miles long by like 5 or 6 miles wide, and I don't know how many miles deep, but that's going to create a huge devastation not only to the island of Nicaragua, but the channels are going to mesh together, and all that sedimentation is going to go somewhere. And to me, it sounds like an environmental disaster that cannot possibly help the coral in that area.
What's the name of it, Ann?
The Nicaraguan Intercoastal Canal.
Nicaraguan.
I think it'd be something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be something to do a show on.
Okay, thank you very much. You don't have great familiarity with that, but I wonder if you're familiar with other kinds of developments around the world. We've already talked about coastal development. I would imagine a huge chunk of the world's coast is populated and can't stand much more development, and probably projects like this would not be very good for the coral reefs, I would think.
I would imagine that you're absolutely correct. Like Anne said, my immediate thought is of the sedimentation and how that would affect coral reefs by clouding the water and stopping them from photosynthesizing to grow, as well as what it would do in terms of, populations sprouting up along the coastline.
Yes.
With, overfishing and water quality issues following hot on the heels.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Anne, for the information. We'll look into that. You spoke earlier about how coral reefs were used for medicinal purposes. Can we talk about that more? How are they used and for what have they been used over the years?
Sure. It's not my primary area of expertise, but I do know that we've found a number of compounds in coral reefs that have been used in pharmaceuticals. For example, sunscreen. Some of the compounds in that came from coral reefs because coral reefs live in these warm, clear waters. They have to be able to deal with the UV radiation just like us. There is also promise for cancer and HIV treatments for pharmaceuticals to treat those diseases being derived from coral reefs. And I believe that compounds from coral reefs are also were used to help develop painkillers.
Hmm. That's interesting. We welcome phone calls. We're talking, in case you're just tuning us in, to about coral reefs, and many of them are in very, very big trouble. Scientists are predicting we could lose 60%, if not more, of the world's coral reefs in the next 30 years, and we're talking about why they're important, what the threat is, where it's coming from, and what can be done about it. And our guest is Dr. Madhavi Kalton, a lead conservation scientist and Reefs Tomorrow Initiative Program Director with the Coral Reef Alliance. If you'd like to join us, we would love to have you join us. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. I'm sure many of our listeners have done snorkeling in various parts of the world, and tourist trade is a big thing in the Caribbean and Hawaii and so many parts of the world. Are tourists to blame for any of the damage to coral reefs? Are there things that tourists should know about? Are there areas that maybe tourists shouldn't go so they can just be pristine?
Great questions. So I think tourism can be both a benefit and a potential harm to coral reefs. As I said earlier, one of the things a lot of people don't realize about coral reefs is that they're a living animal. And so by standing on reefs, by touching reefs, by kicking at reefs with a fin, you can actually damage them and kill portions of them. And so if you are a snorkeler or a diver and you're going to visit these areas, there are definitely some best practices you can use for how to make sure you're not damaging the reefs you're there to visit. And there's some guidelines about that on our website, coral.org. You can also, tourism can be harnessed for good. There's a community that lives in Fiji called the Kumbalau community, and they have customary tenure. They are the traditional owners of both the land and water next to their community. And what they've done is they've set up something called the Namena Marine Reserve. And tourists who go and visit the Marine Reserve pay a fee to do that. And that fee goes to the local community. The local community has been using that money to manage the Marine Reserve itself, as well as setting up scholarships for its children, building bus stops, things like that.
Hmm.
And so this is an example of where you can actually harness the money from tourism to directly benefit the reefs and communities. And in fact, Namena Marine Reserve is one of the top dive destinations in the world.
Oh, it is?
Supposed to be stunning. The reefs are in fantastic shape. The fishes are all healthy. And so here's an example of if you are going to go visit a reef, make sure that you use best diving practices and then think about how you can use your money to support management of these beautiful, beautiful animals.
Right. Do you have any idea who has jurisdiction? I mean, who owns the waters that have the reefs in them off the coast of Hawaii or off the coast of Jamaica or wherever they happen to be?
I think that very much varies from place to place. Some There's obviously some federal regulations. Each country has its exclusive economic zone. So there's a federal jurisdiction over reefs. But then when it comes to nearshore waters, different countries take different approaches to deciding who owns and manages those areas. In the Pacific in particular, there's a long, rich history of different communities that live next to a reef being the owners of that resource. In the Caribbean, if there was that sort of a system, it's disappeared over time. Some places, it's a regency or a state that has jurisdiction, so it does vary from place to place.
Do you think we need a world body jurisdiction?
Well, I'm not sure. That's a great question. I think that because we've got these two different threats that have different kinds of threats that are facing coral reefs, the global and the local, I really believe that in order to save these reefs, we need to act locally. And so establishment of a global body, I'm not sure that that would help address these problems at a local level.
Let's go to Richard in Madison. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I have a question. For many years, my wife and I vacationed in February in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and I noticed the great number of cruise ships, what my wife used to call floating hotels, mm-hmm. coming into the marine terminal for the day. And I was wondering how much, with all those people in that hotel, they're creating a lot of excrement that has to be discharged somewhere. And I'm wondering if that has any effect on coral reefs.
That's a great question, Richard. I believe that it certainly can. Obviously, it depends how that waste is treated and where that waste is treated, whether it's treated through onboard systems and then offloaded mid-ocean versus dumped into a lagoon in a coral reef. That would make a really big difference as to the fate of the coral reef. It's something certainly to be concerned about, and I believe that people are starting to think about this in particular in Cozumel, the island of Cozumel on the other coast of Mexico, just south of Cancun. There's been some concerns about the waste products from these ships, as well as just what it does to reefs if you suddenly have that many people descend upon them in one day.
Right. Anything else, Richard?
No, I just thought, and thanks for the answer.
Thanks for the question and for calling. And more of you can call if you'd like. We're talking about coral reefs and how important they are for fish to feed on and to feed so many people in the world, how they're important for medicine, and how endangered they are. We'll have to ask our guests if coral reefs are endangered. Have they reached that level yet? But the predictions are that we could lose just a huge percentage of the coral reefs by the year 2030 or 2035. What would the world, we can ask that question, look like without coral reefs? What are the threats to their existence and to their continued survival? That's what's on our agenda this hour of the program, and we're welcoming your phone calls at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our guest is Dr. Madhavi Colton. She is a lead conservation scientist and Reefs Tomorrow Initiative Director with the Coral Reef Alliance. She's an ecologist. She has her PhD in ecology, and I believe she grew up in Australia. We'll have to ask her that. So we'll take more phone calls momentarily. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Steve in Lake Mills, hi.
Hello, how are you today?
All right, Steve, how are you?
Good. I'm doing well. Yesterday, Congress voted to eliminate funding for climate change, you know, from NASA's budget. And what effect might that have not only on coral reefs but elsewhere in the study of climate change? It's just a draconian measure on the House side, and I'm just wondering what effect that might have. Thank you, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Steve, for the call.
Yes, Steve, you bring up a good point that we do need money to support understanding climate change and perhaps more importantly, starting to react to it. As a society, given the carbons that we've have emitted to date since the Industrial Revolution, we've already committed our planet to a certain degree of warming and our oceans to a certain degree of acidification. So even if we were to stop today, stop dead all of our carbon emissions magically, we'd still have a lot of trouble on the horizon to deal with. So I think that one of the things that we can all do in terms of protecting not just coral reefs, but all of the systems that we as humans rely on, is pick up the phone and call our politicians and try and get them to act on our behalf to push some of either some legislation through or funding through to help support us in our struggle against global climate change.
Jim in Madison sends this email. We hear about the huge islands of plastic trash floating in the oceans. One massive island is about the size of the state of Texas in the Pacific Ocean. Does this trash affect the coral reefs, and should nations undertake a massive construction project to remove the trash from the oceans?
That's a great question. Trash is a real problem. There's some really... there are crazy images of birds living on remote islands in the Pacific, and you can, I guess some researchers went to those islands and took pictures of some dead birds, and you can just see that their entire digestive system is full of trash. So what we do at home, how we do things like grocery shopping and what sort of containers we get can have a really big influence on the state of our oceans. Yes, plastics can impact coral reefs as well and the organisms that live there. Whether we should invest money in a huge cleanup activity, it's a good idea. We should probably also invest some money and time in thinking about how we can reduce our reliance on plastics in our everyday life as well.
Yeah, so some of this just seems to make a lot of common sense, doesn't it? We tend to be, many of us human beings, who don't think about what happens as a result of certain kinds of actions. Wouldn't you think that you getting a lot of plastic and just throwing things in your garbage that are plastic, it's not going to decompose, and what's going to happen to it, and people still throw trash around, and people don't realize when they see the coral reefs that maybe they're bleached out, which is a sign of distress, and are we causing it? We just don't think long-term here, or what our actions are doing to other beings on the planet.
We are, as a species, very bad about thinking
we are bad
about the repercussions of our actions. And I think a lot of what makes it difficult for us to remember how our actions affect the natural world is that we live at quite a remove from the natural world at this point. We're able to get our food even if there's a part of the world that's in drought, whereas we used to live quite close to our natural resources and have much more direct linkage with them. And that's certainly the case for many of us here in the U.S. For local communities living on atolls where they are relying on coral reefs, the connection is much more immediate and much more clear. As an example, the nation of Kiribati, which is in the Pacific, is primarily low-lying atolls, and with the sea level rise that we expect to occur, they've actually made some international agreements with different countries, including Fiji and New Zealand, to take their refugees once their homes go away. So yes, here, for many of us here in the U.S., we live at a distance from the natural environment that allows us to forget the repercussions of our actions, whereas those actions are much more immediately felt by some of these communities that we're impacting by the way we live.
Hmm. What's that? How do you spell the name of that nation? I'd like to look that up. Kiribati?
It's Kiribati, but there's a trick at the end. It's K-I-R-I-B-A-T-I. The T-I is pronounced as an S sound in Kiribati.
Okay, I'll have to look that up. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Australia. You were right. You guessed it. I moved to the U.S., to California, when I was in high school.
Oh. And so did some of your career start because you did some snorkeling when you were a young one?
Indeed. I have always loved being in the ocean, being outside in general, but certainly from a young age, would spend as much time as possible in the water. So I have fond memories of snorkeling as a child, swimming, and I feel very, very fortunate to have been able to make this my career.
Mm-hmm. And you said that you got to see some reefs in the Caribbean and in Hawaii. Are there places that you will be going in the next year or two in scientific study?
Yes. Both scientific study and then, you know, my work is, in my job, I connect science to local conservation activities. And so I act in that kind of bridging translation capacity. So I imagine, this is just going to make everyone want to grow up and become a marine biologist. I imagine that this year I will be potentially traveling to Indonesia and maybe back to the Caribbean.
Wonderful. Well, if anybody should be there, it's you. Yeah. No, well, it's important. It's important work, right? It just happens to be beautiful surroundings, but your mission is to make sure they stay beautiful surroundings.
Indeed.
Mark in Eau Claire. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, I have listened kind of to this theme, maybe a narrative, we call it, women who, not women, but, you know, I guess, global scientists or something who think that there is some alternative to controlling population. You know, that all we have to do is educate. You know, one of the prime examples here for me is after that tsunami in Indonesia, they had, they poured in a bunch of funds, and the culture that they then, that emerged from that was a Sharia law culture. And the women there are taught that it is their duty to come to the United States and spread Sharia law.
Well, I am not at all sure about that, but let's take on the issue, which is one to take on, of population, that part of the problem is caused by overpopulation.
Yes, you know, overpopulation leads to a lot of problems globally. It places a lot of stress on our natural resources. We have more mouths to feed. And then more people doing things like driving around. So, yes, population growth and rampant population growth is certainly something that needs to be addressed. It's outside my focus of work, but it's something I'm acutely aware of.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Joan in Milwaukee next. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Hi.
I know that we try to think globally and act locally around here, but we have a legislature that's can't be counted on. They did make it illegal to distribute those beauty products with little tiny plastic beads in sometime in the near future. But on the other hand, they have in the budget to drastically cut recycling funds. And I just think it's horrible.
How do you get politicians on board? Do you find that they're pretty amenable to conservation efforts, Dr. Colton?
That's a great question. It really depends from place to place. I know that in our work in Honduras, one of the techniques that our amazing field manager who's based down there uses is she gets politicians in the water.
Really?
And takes them out to show them these reefs and show them this magical, natural, underwater world. And a lot of times, by having people see what it is their actions are affecting,
yes,
they're more likely to change those actions.
Right. Well, that makes sense. I don't know about a junket to Fiji or something, but certainly I'll bet there are a lot of people who have seen them and haven't noticed what they're seeing. They need a guide to show them what's happening. Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks, Joan, very much for your call. Our number, we have time for a couple more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. And you've been stressing this local aspect of this. Tell me more about local communities in various parts of the world and the role that coral reefs play in those communities.
Sure. So let's go back to the Pacific again.
All right.
As I had mentioned earlier, a lot of Pacific nations have, the communities that live on coral reefs have customary tenure or rights over those reefs. And in many countries, there's a practice that is traditional in those countries. In Fiji, it's called tambu. Basically, what a chief or a community will do is say that a particular part of the reef is off limits for harvest. It's a tambu area.
Oh.
And that reef will remain closed until, say, something like a wedding or a funeral happens, something where there's a big feast, and that part of the reef will then be opened and the harvest will be used in these ceremonies. So there's this long history of local communities understanding these basic ideas of coral reef management and understanding how if you set aside an area and don't go there for a while, you can get more from that area over time.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to work best when there are local communities. The problems is what I'm getting from this hour, some of what we're getting from the hour, is when you have, you know, big cruise ships or you've got huge fishing operations taking place where people don't have the reef right outside their back door and don't have as great an understanding of what their actions are going to do to the reef, right?
Sure, yes, absolutely. Then there are local communities that do overfish their own reefs, whether that's because they need to put food on the table or because they don't realize the results of their actions or because they're out for the quick buck. It's unclear.
Mm-hmm.
But we can, there's been some progress made in Honduras. There was a community that was poaching from the marine park. And we worked with that community to train them to go out and catch lionfish instead of poaching from the marine park. So this is an example of where a local community might not understand the effects it's having on a reef, but with a little bit of guidance, you can change a behavior from having a negative impact to having a positive impact.
Let's go to Mike in Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Hi, I'll talk fast.
Okay.
Times Theater in Milwaukee had a movie 3 weeks ago called Plastic Paradise. It was about an Asian lady who went around into the Midway Islands and filmed everything. So you can see all the stuff that's going on. It's a real horror story. I'm not an environmentalist, but I was actually moved by the movie. It takes 3 years to get government permission to go to Midway Island. In order to do what she did, I advise everybody to see Plastic Paradise, to go to your library and ask for it, because it's an eye-opener.
What did she see? How did it open your eyes?
Well, it showed 100,000 mammals being destroyed because of the plastic floating around Midway Island. Now it's starting to hit Honolulu. It's Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
It showed that the plastic nets and stuff are dragging over the coral reefs and pulling them up. It showed that the albatrosses, there's like a million albatrosses in that area, who are being summarily destroyed. You can't believe the destruction that's going on. And then when this lady tried to get an audience with the plastic companies, they refused. So she went to one of their conventions, and she used her little telephone to film interviews until she got kicked out of there. You have to see it.
Yeah.
This is a real eye-opener. It's real emotional. I'm sure that everybody will be moved by it.
Thank you very much for letting us know about that. Dr. Colton, thank you very much for being with us. Continued success on your work. I'll be interested in your future travels and science.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your program, Kathleen. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. The feeling is likewise. Dr. Madhavi Colton, she is Program Director of the Reefs Tomorrow Initiative. She investigates coral reef resilience, works with local communities to work on conservation, and it was an enlightening hour. Thanks to Marika Suval for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up momentarily from National Public Radio and then George Hodgman, whose book has been receiving just glowing reviews, and I can see why. It is Bettyville, and we'll be speaking with George about going home to Paris, Missouri, and looking after Mom.